The DeFalco Files is an entertainment-based program. Some memories of certain events might be fuzzy. All opinions are that of the host. Content might not be appropriate for children and some adults. Listener discretion is advised. And remember, the truth is here. Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting presents The DeFalco Files with FSW owner Joe DeFalco and your host, Matt Michaels.
Hey everybody, Matt Michaels here on The DeFalco Files with the owner-creator, Mr. Joe DeFalco, FSW's mayor of Las Vegas, Vince McMahon of the West Coast. What other nicknames do you have?
I didn't know the mayor of Las Vegas was one of them. I think you just created.
Legacy. You are our guest today, and let me ask you and weigh in on that. What do you think about Joe? Is he, mayor of Las Vegas?
I definitely
material?
Say he's definitely the Vince McMahon of the Vegas wrestling. There's no doubt, man. You want to make it somewhere this day and age, you definitely got to go through FSW and talk to Joe. So, I mean, there's some other ones out there, but it's FSW is the leader. It's just the way it is, you know?
You're right. It is the way it is.
Yes.
How legacy, you know, how did you get involved in wrestling? Did it become your dream as a kid? And at what point did you find yourself face to face with Joe DeFalco for the first time?
Well, I knew I wanted to do this wrestling thing from a kid, to a point where my mom was like, you need to think about doing something else, you know. But to fast forward a little bit, Junkyard Dog came out to my middle school, Roy Martin Middle School out in Vegas.
Wow.
And he had a wrestling show he was doing with the NWC. And he said, who in here wants to be a wrestler? And the kids pointed back to me. And I did a little Macho Man impersonation, Hulk Hogan. And he gave me some tickets to go see it. NWC had a good run. I got to see Ultimate Warrior versus Honky Tonk Man, Return of Revenge. Wow. Some desert death matches with Sabu and Cactus Jack. It was amazing to actually, you know, get the experience of wrestling thing. But before that, because I think I went to that's probably the same time. WrestleMania 9 was actually my very first wrestling show. I forgot about that. I was in the Boy Scouts, and my mom told me I wanted to quit, and they had VIP for WrestleMania 9. It's bittersweet because they thought it was going to be a two-hour show, and it was 3 hours. So we left after Hulk Hogan and Bruce Barbieke beat Money Inc. And we're leaving. It still sticks to me today as Mr. Perfect's theme song is hitting while we're leaving.
Oh.
The worst. I Boy Scouts was cool, but that's one thing that comes to mind when I think about the Boy Scouts, man.
Joe, would you take Legacy?
Yeah, so
Legacy, let me follow up.
We go to
can you hear me?
Okay.
All right. Let me ask Joe, do you see Legacy as the Boy Scouting type?
No, actually I didn't. It seems like the only reason he stuck with the Boy Scouts was because he got tickets to WrestleMania. So
I was in there for a while, Joe. I was in there a while. Yeah. If we fast forward to the Buffalo Gyms, BWF, me and you know him as Leon Hader, went down there and checked out their facility. Yokozuna was the head trainer there, and I didn't know what an independent wrestler was. I thought these guys did it for a living. So seeing these dudes like show enough bad, and he told me, yo, man, I'm a taxi cab driver. I said, why are you doing that? Are you wrestling? Major Maniac, who was G.I. Joe back then. Of course, Rush. I mean, you know, Rush was a man. But Buffalo Jim, I met him, and I told him I wanted to join his school. And he said, he probably does anybody. And I said, you're thinking about joining my school? I said, yeah. He said, tell you what, kid. And I was getting his autograph And he said, the next BWF champion. Kid, I make people champions that look like champions. They lit a fire in me, man. I thought I had a belt waiting for me or something. So. Doing the military, tried to pay for that wrestling school. I served honorably, but that wasn't the truth. They don't pay for wrestling school. that's kind of how I met Joe at the PWF, and that whole crew, man. That was awesome, man.
Well, first of all, thank you for your service, man. And I just love that you thought you could transfer the Army education benefits over to wrestling school. That's brilliant. So, Joe, Joe, do you remember the first time you bumped into Legacy? What was going on in your life at that time?
I don't remember the first time, but when Rush was part of the BWF and he ended up at the beach show, which Legacy can tell you, there was about 8 tickets sold for that show. And Legacy was one of the people who had bought the tickets for the show. Like, there was literally like 9 or 10 people.
Wow.
When I think I was doing the radio show at the time, and I'm pretty sure that most of the other people got free tickets. Okay. So Legacy may be the only one who actually purchased own money a ticket to that show.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And, you know, backstage, I was, you know, at that time doing the radio show. You know, Buffalo Jim would kind of promote his stuff on there. He actually got the beach to give me some money to put the advertisements on the radio. Mm. So I'll always be happy for that. But I remember being told what Buffalo Jim got paid for that show. And it was like, wow, because I know all those guys, and Rush will tell you that because of the Athletic Commission, they all had to get a check from the promoter. And the checks were $2 because that was like the least
he could pay.
And almost everybody on there got like $2 except for Viscera, who was Mabel at the time. And Viscera, I remember, got something like $600, but he drove from like Alabama or Arkansas to the show.
Wow.
And there was the dude who wanted to wrestle, the big shot Eddie Cash, who supposedly paid him another $600 just so he would take like a clothesline or something from Eddie Cash, because he thought that was going to get him signed to the WWF back in the day. So, Vegas wrestling, you know, the NWC, I knew of it a little bit, but when Buffalo Jim got involved and then Rush broke off because he just didn't like the way things were going, you know, I was part of the management team of the UWF, and, I don't remember exactly when Legacy came in, but I remember the early days, and, you know, I remember, you know, I don't know who was against, but I remember a lot of his early matches, and the one thing about him was a guy who did, you know, he had a lot of charisma, you know, and very quickly, you know, the fan base really gravitated toward him.
Sure. Legacy? What's your story behind actually ending up as Legacy as your character?
My dad wanted to be a boxer, and it didn't really work out for him. And I'm the second. So, and I had a dream about performing in the ring too, but not boxing and wrestling. So, just naturally on my father's legacy. So it just kind of went with that. I was doing that legacy since backyard wrestling trampoline with Leon. So we had a little trampoline league in high school thinking it was stuff. So the red and black do-rag goes back a while, man.
was that before or after that you broke into the house and basically damaged it all?
I don't know what you're talking about, Joe.
I don't know. Hater released it, so you better get that footage off then.
It's because I'm just so crazy. It's like it never happened. I don't even remember that.
Yes, that's now,
we were really. Yeah. We were trying to go hard back then. Unlike what we have now, we do have schooling. I mean, I wish FSW something like that was around, we were in high school, we probably wouldn't, resorted to other measures of trying to hone our crafts and had a lot of bad habits. Yeah. With the UWF, though, got those guys that branched off and got to train with them. Rush ran the UWF. We had Scott Casey, Mike Lane, and Nick Bakwigo were our head trainers. Man, learned so much from all three of those guys. Nick, rest in peace. Mike Lane, man, amazing. And of course, Scott Casey trained Booker T.
Yeah.
But the guys that helped out also was the guys that came over from BWF. Those guys like, Maniac, Rush, Shonoff, Reno Tufuli, man, wow. For a big man. Butcher was just a little bit bigger than him. Some of these guys you probably don't remember, but probably heard of, man. It was a big deal to us, man.
Sure.
The dude named, what's his name, Brother William. And, of course, the crew of students. A lot back then, those guys were bigger. I mean, the smaller guys, I think Funny Bone joined right before me. See a Funny Bone down there, a guy named Brady A. Desire. Shout out to the Tony Leo, man, the Iron Lion, Fredo Dinelli. All those Candyman. It's so many. I don't want to leave anybody out, but Boy Technique. Of course, Remy Marcel was down there toward the end. It was magic, man. Had Riggs Brothers were there. I don't want to even leave anybody out, man. It just because that's I think loyalty, man. Sometimes you can't train that. You either got to have it or not, and that's why I started. So I'm always going to have love and respect for those guys that introduced me into this business, and let me try to hone my craft. So it's always going to be there, man. Rush is the man, always, man.
So, Joe, how does Legacy come into the fold with FSW? And do you remember seeing him wrestle before, you guys got an opportunity to start working together?
Well, yeah, he wrestled. Through my radio show, I worked out a deal with Rush, and Rush ended up basically adding. He sponsored the last hour of my radio show. It used to be a 1 hour radio show. So we did it in a 2 hour radio show, and I said, hey, I got this idea. And he was cool with it. So every Friday night, we would do live events at the facility. And because of wrestling being regulated, everything was free. Rush didn't bring in any talent because there was no money coming in and basically no money going out. And we would, every Friday night, we would broadcast live on KLAV, and we got an hour's worth of the matches. And, we started off with, 30, 40 people, and we used to average like 80 to 100 people inside this. Man, we talk about our FSW arena. That was a bandbox. It was, 80 people in there is like jam-packed.
Jesus.
And, We would have guys like I remember doing commentary with Rico. Rico was in OVW at the time, and he loved wrestling, and he'd come down and he'd help out. I remember Reno, who was part of WCW
head trainer.
He would also come down, and there was a good crew of guys, and we would run the shows every week. And then we kind of broke off. We kind of had a falling out, me and Rush, that we talked about, and things weren't going the way it was, what I was expecting, and it's his place, so it's his decisions. So we kind of broke off to do Vegas Extreme, where we brought in some talent. We also used guys like Maniac and Legacy and the Riggs Brothers. We also brought in and Snook Jr., who was a major part of the UWF, and then mixed in, we would bring in some Immodest crew from APW, which became Iron, which was like Bison Smith and Ace Steel from Chicago, And, you know, the Arizona crew, which we've talked about with Navajo and Gallo and Mike Knox,
Mike Kirk,
you know, so we did our thing there, but that didn't last very long. And wrestling became dormant for a long time, you know, probably a good 6-7 years,
probably 4 or 5 years. It was a long time.
And then I decided that after I heard wrestling was deregulated, I wanted to do a show. And at that point, Legacy had a school which basically had a lot of the ex-UWF guys that were there, Scotty Ices of the world and Iron Lions. But he also had some new talent. And me and Legs always got along. Yeah. And it was always the outside people, like I like to say. Like, Legacy had a partner. He didn't really like the deal. And we had our guys. And they're like, why are you helping him? And his guys are like, why are you helping him? And the thing was, we wanted to see wrestling succeed. We loved wrestling. Right. Neither one of us was doing it for money. You know, Legs always had a good job. And he decided, hey, you know what? I'm going to get a ring. I'm going to do this. I decided, hey, I want to run wrestling shows, because that's what I did when I was with Rush. When I got to book the shows, it didn't matter the talent. We tried to hide as much weaknesses as possible with a lot of ideas, and I was allowed to, for the first time, book shows. So I felt I was ready to do my own business. And I went out there, and I remember going to see Legacy, which was like on Craig Road by the old cannery. I remember he wasn't there yet. And I remember his boy Technique was there. And it's like, well, why would we want to help you? And I remember him saying that. And I was like, you know, this is good for everybody. You guys aren't doing a show yet. We don't have a school.
Right.
Because my idea was I wanted Legacy to rent me his ring. And, you know, we were in the process of trying to get one, but we worked out a quick deal with the swap meet, the Rancho swap meet, to run a show Memorial Day weekend. So Legs came up to me and he said, hey, I'll let you use the ring. I'm not going to charge you if you do me a favor. All I want to do is get my guy spotlighted, and we had to use his students on the show. And then we had a battle royal. That in the battle royal, the winner got a contract to be on the FSW roster. Mm-hmm. So in that battle royal, you had Legacy, you had Scotty Ice, who was friends with a guy named Remy Marcel, who happened to be in town from when he was living in New York, and Iron Lion, and Big Reno Tofuli, who had that chokeslam at the time, Crash Cody. Over top rope, and basically Cody couldn't grab the rope and went crashing into the concrete. And that's where Crash Test Cody got born, because in reality he was like Junk Bond Trader or whatever he was. Donnie Darko. Something like that. And, you know, the show went really well. And after that, we had a little delay in being able to get another show. Well, Legacy started running some shows at his facility at that point. And he needed some help. So the owner of FSW was lugging his sound equipment and bringing it to them. So I ran the sound for their shows. And again, people on our side are like, oh, why are you helping him out like that? I'm like, because he's a good guy. I like him. And he helped me when we needed it. You know, it's working together. Nobody looked at it as competition. You know, Legs kind of ran things more like Rush did with the UWF. He was just trying to get matches and spotlight his younger guys. And he wanted to give them opportunities, you know, to do that. So we worked together for a long time until he ended up moving. And then he had issues, I remember, with the city and stuff. But there was plenty of guys, because we did stuff in our backyard. And Tommy Danger, now known as Sugar Brown, and Mike Delight, where he started with Phil at the UWF, with VCW, they came over and they trained with us. And, you know, in modern day wrestling, that usually is considered a no-no. Right. It's one or the other where you're going to train, because you're going to learn different things and you don't want to gray area it, because some trainers get offended because one guy does it this way. And then his response would be like, yeah, but at VCW, they told me to do this.
Right.
But having the good relationship, and it was rock solid, there was nobody who was really going to interfere in doing things anyway. So
yeah.
I guess he pretty much got on board immediately as part of the FSW roster.
What was it like for you, Legacy, trying to run a school, and, you know, having the aspirations of more so the fundamental of wrestling, the idea of, hey, I want to, you know, train people, get these kids seen, because I love the sport, I love the entertainment as compared to, you know, some of the guys who just get into it because they want to charge people to roll around in the ring and don't really give them the full training that they should, because they don't care about the training, they care about the money.
But I, like Joe, I just really just wanted to run shows. And I kind of wanted to bring back what we had in the UWF. I didn't really want to be the kind of the figurehead on it, but sometimes you get stuck in that role when you invest so much into it that, well, now, and you got people behind you that believe in you. You know, the early students even had Eric Calloway, you know, just certain people that one guy that was a coworker of mine, Devin Walker, you know, those original guys, Mike Delight, Sugar Brown,
Hit Showtime,
you know, all those guys, yeah, the guys that came in there, you know, they believe in what you're putting out there. So some things happened right in the beginning where we just really, a lot of things got kind of stuck with just going with just me. I won't get too personal with other people there, but I had to wear a lot of hats. So. But hey, I'm gonna go ahead and try this. I'm invested. I'm gonna go ahead and try to do my best at this. Get these guys trained good enough, and I figured with the training we had got trained, at least I'm not gonna put my name on there like I've been around the world, because I haven't. Sure. But at least to get these guys trained up enough where they can get spotlighted and get better. That's what happened with us in UWF. We kept training, and then we performed in front of a live audience, and you kind of just get better. That's how it works when you work against people that are at a higher level than you. Maybe you can bring them in and get Vegas going. Me and Joe shared the same goal at the time, was to bring wrestling back to Vegas. It was very vague, but that was the goal. And what they ever say, go with the devil, you know, the devil you don't know. The fact of the matter is, me and Joe go back from when I first started. So, I mean, I know Joe loves wrestling. You don't have to be in the ring as a performer to love wrestling. Joe's going to go all out, and he's already tasted with Vegas Extreme and UWF, and seen a lot of things through the years here. So trust me, this is the guy that definitely we could work with, and we had a working relationship that was good, spotlighting the guys that were definitely ready, and they can learn how to transport this ring, put it up. That's part of learning this business, is taking pride in our canvas. That's where we perform. That's our house right there. So learning how to build that up, put it down, and then also have respect for his business, a different way of learning what the promoters got to go through. I mean, Joe had to, people don't know, he had to really knock down a lot of doors for us to get in these places. People see it now that they come to FSW, man, that first few years of grinding, man, that's what I'm talking about. It's hard. People see it now, but him and Rocky T, man, they had to go in and break down those doors into Sam's Town, Silverton. I mean, even to get back over there to Silver Nugget after what happened with the NWC. So they were kind of skeptical, but man, it just those first few years with FSW, man, those guys. Oh, man. You know, now that you got that network, Joe, you got to put our stuff out there, man.
No, we got a lot of stuff from, like, the early days, but I got a vat of tapes because, you know, since there's so much technology, We got those DVs, so we're able to pull up the early footage of 2009 and 2010.
Yeah.
A lot of the early days, the Silver Nugget, you know, even school shows. We did anniversary shows at the place at Boulder Highway.
Yep.
Because, man, if we, you know, we love our facility and all the work that we've put into it, but size-wise, man, I can't imagine what we could have done if we were at the old facility, because it was just so much bigger. You know, I remember packing 300 people in that place.
Wow.
You know, and it was crazy because, you know, the fans have always been so behind us that, you know, and that's what makes the great experience that it is, that these people care. You know, it's funny, you know. You know, we started the network and you see a few names and you're like, hey, wow, Washable Marker. I haven't seen that dude or heard of him in many years. And now that guy, you know, was a huge fan of the company. Yeah. And he actually just signed up to be part of the network to watch a lot of the shit. So that was like, wow, it's good to see some of the, you know, Brandon Talley and those old school guys from, you know, that would sit. The Moshmans in the front row, like each, you know, few years it's overturned, but you know, nobody has anything but great things to say about FSW when we were struggling as the, you know, the little engine that could, that, you know, where we are now, it's like, as Phil said, the work that was put into it, you know, people just, they're running a wrestling show. You know, there was a lot of conversations. There was a lot of no's, let me tell you.
What was for you, Legacy, in those early days? Did you have a favorite match that you had or a feud that you had that sticks out in your head to be something that was really enjoyable?
With FSW?
Yeah.
Or are you talking about past?
No, FSW.
I mean, FSW, you know, it's with FSW, it's kind of crazy because me and Funny Bone started in the UWF, and we never really wrestled each other. We were like one time we first started, and Joe, man, had this feud going on. Like, we started as tag team, and then we battled a few times. So there was a time where I sung a Christmas tree song. He put a Christmas tree on me. There was different things that we had at FSW, and it's kind of crazy because our chemistry was actually pretty good, but we never really, you know, touched base that much in the UWF. So that stands out. The Hater Nation, oh man, I would say that first run of FSW, getting there was more. It was just more about fun. It wasn't really the pressure on with UWF. Just kind of like, I want it all with FSW. I was just having fun, and it was cool, like getting that with Leon Hader. The first generation of Hater Nation had Mike Rogers, Mr. Smith in there. We all went to high school together, you know. So it's something about when you go back with those guys that you roamed high school with, it always keeps you at this level. It's kind of hard to explain where you just kind of like, you go back so far. The love of it is just so, like, you know, you can't balance it out. Every time you go out there, you feel like you're giving back to the business you love. So when you go out there with my boys, man, it's just Kenny King. Oh man, that's like when you see him on Impact and he was wearing the Sucker Free shirt. Man, I was just like, that felt like we made it. You know, he talking to Hulk Hogan wearing the Sucker Free shirt. So there's more than a handful of moments that stand out. But I will say one card that made us feel like we really made it was the Highway to Hell card, the one you did where Alcatraz and Tayshaun Prince. To me, that card right there with that cage match, that to me is still like the pinnacle of all that hard work and then that big payoff. It's just something special I hold to that show.
Without a doubt, that was like what really put us officially on the map as something special. We're good. People liked our stuff. But the cage match was definitely something that really catapulted
Yeah. I'm starting to fan the Hogan.
When he was talking about the Hater Nation and the early stuff, him and Funny Bone, because Legacy is really not only a Vegas original, he's an FSW original. Yeah. So with us from day one, and you know, we worked that into the storylines when he was part of the Vegas originals also. So he had gotten some, you know, he got a lot of juice early on. You know, him and Funny Bone, they were the local tag team. We had no tag teams. I always talk about it, how we had to bring in the Bandos and we had to bring in the Von Dooms, and then we brought in the Reno Scum. And, you know, a lot of these teams were all from out of state because we just didn't have that local talent at the time. And Funny Bone and Legacy were extremely over as a tag team. They were the local guys. Of course, people were getting behind them. And after we did the first part of the tournament, we did a ladder match to crown the first ever champion.
Yeah.
Tag champions. And Funny Bone has always been known. I believe the show was called No Risk, No Reward.
Yeah.
And the one thing about Funny Bone and Legacy, well, they were polar opposites. You know, Funny Bone was the crazy dude, and Legacy was the guy who was very calculated and very methodical. And, you know, he was the even keeled one of the tag. And the big spot in the match was they had the tag belts won, but Funny Bone saw an opportunity on top of the cage to not grab the belt, but to jump off the top of the ladder.
Yeah.
Side and go crashing down on like Modest and Gallo and all that because it was a four-way tag.
Yeah.
And with that, that started the foreshadowing of Legacy and Funny Bone picking up. And we ended up using Leon Hader because of that, which when we talked with Hader, he came in to watch the show to support his boy Legacy, and none of the refs showed up, and Hader reffed all the matches.
Wow.
So got the heated feud between Legacy and Funny Bone. And crowds fired up for it, and Funny Bone's, you know, the baby face in the deal. And I remember another great moment in FSW history was, and I'm very proud of, you know, helping put the idea of the finish together. And Funny Bone was on top of the balcony on the hard cam, which we didn't use the hard cam, but it was a balcony through the hard cam. So it was 15, 20 feet up at least. And we had Legacy and the referees, they were all around. And it was like, oh, my God, what is Funny Bone going to do? And Funny Bone jumps off. And Legacy kind of slides the special guest referee, who happens to be Leon Hader. At the time, nobody knows their friendship. Nobody knows what's going on. And at that point, Hader goes crashing down. Funny Bone drags Legacy into the ring, and then he puts a submission move on Legacy. Yeah. And just as Legacy's about to tap out, Leon Hader slides back into the ring. Legacy taps out. The crowd erupts, and then all of a sudden it goes, and the winner, as a result of a disqualification, was Legacy, and the crowd went crazy, and
I remember that,
that was when the Hater Nation was really born.
Yeah,
you know, Joe, when you think of how simple that is in terms of, is it something where when you get an audience invested and caught up into the emotion of what's going on, that regardless of how many times we've seen it as wrestling fans, that you get so emotional that you forget that there are quote unquote rules to be followed, and you can easily use that finish a number of times because it seems like that storytelling is just universal, playing off of the passion of fans to make them then hate the decision and set up a, you know, an ongoing feud. Is that something that really kind of feeds into what you like to see as a fan and what you like to see as a promoter, hearing that reaction of the fans?
Well, you got to remember, I was a fan of wrestling since 1974. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until 2009 that I did a wrestling show. Yeah. So there's so many things growing up that I watched that I thought was brilliant. You know, I mm-hmm. always remember when Rick Rude beat the Ultimate Warrior for the Intercontinental yeah. Championship because Bobby Heenan was holding on to Warrior's leg and he couldn't kick out. And oh yeah. my God, the Warrior, that was the first loss in his career.
Yeah. yeah.
And I don't remember mm-hmm. who it was, but I used that finish, you know, 30 years later, yeah. and people are like, oh, what a finish. That was great. And it's like, yeah. I believe me, when I do something very well, I don't have any problem taking credit for it, but I also don't have any problem giving out credit. And sure. I'm like, yeah. you know, I love the idea, but it wasn't my idea. And that's why I chose to use it. Because in 2010, there's probably 2/3 of our fans that have never seen that finish of Rick Rude with the Ultimate Warrior.
Right.
Well, they never seen, you know, the referee disqualify on the outside for jumping off the balcony and mm-hmm. simultaneously with the tap out. You just took away what they came to see and mm-hmm. beat that emotion. And I hate to sound like that old fart guy, you know, like, hey, back in my day, because this was 8-9 years ago. But because of the internet, mm. of the media, of everything that's going on and mm. the fast pace of everything, there's so many gray areas on who's the heel, who's the face, it's cool moves, who's not selling enough, who's yeah. selling much, you know, whatever it is. The bottom line is a great story will outweigh great moves yeah. all the time.
Yeah.
And when you have a good story, and that's why I think FSW has been as successful as it is, because besides having the Brian Cages and the Eli mm-hmm. Drake, Reno Scums and the Kevin Cross and the Chris Bays and all these guys and the Lacey Ryans and the people who've made it in this business, mm-hmm. the thing most people remember about Kevin Cross is his character, his personality, yeah. his promos that he did.
Yeah.
Well, Chris Bay, on the other hand, is he's a machine in that ring doing unbelievable stuff.
Yeah.
So you could go one way or you can go the other way and the crowd will still be enamored.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, mm-hmm. sometimes today, more people are concerned with what they have to get in. And, yeah. hey, you know, I understand it's independent wrestling. You know, I only made $40 for the show. So I really need to stay a babyface because I want to sell those 5 shirts. You know what I mean? Because, yeah. you know, it's kind of tough where you got to, you know, you weigh
yeah.
that out.
Yeah.
They're nothing. You know, there's numerous stories that I could go through in FSW that Legacy was a part of. I remember Jay Garland and Mike Modest, you know,
yeah.
we had that storyline and Jay Garland got over, you know, more so than he ever had in his career just because of the nastiness of the way Mike Modest was. And he was that. And we did the funny stuff yeah. with him in Vegas where he lost his valet and he was drinking bleach yeah. set with Pauly Cover, you know,
yeah.
and the promo with the Godfather inside the club, all depressed yeah. about his girl. And it's trying to yeah. add more to the product. You know, another great moment was we had the Dynasty versus the Hater Nation in the main event at the Silverton. And the deal was yeah. that the time, Andos and Tyshawn were our champions, the tag champs and the heavyweight champion. So we had Kenny King, Legacy and Hater. Legacy and Hater swap belts with the Commandos and the Young Buck that time and even, you know, the Reno Scum. So the idea was all the belts are on the line. So it didn't matter who got the pinfall from Hater Nation, they would all win the belts.
Yeah.
But for them to accept that, Sal Lee put the Hater Nation's legacy on the yeah. line.
Yeah.
And if the Hater Nation lose, they will have to break up forever.
Yeah.
And yeah. let me tell you something. When the Hater Nation lost, the past, if somebody lost in the main event, the fans at Samstown, at Silverton, or Samstown, they'd book out of the place, go to the cars, go eat, after the Hayter Nation lost, pretty much every fan was still in the building for 10 or 15 minutes as they thanked the fans and gave them, you know, gave them love for the support and everything they had. And that was all because the fans wanted to believe, and they did believe. And when they broke up, like, part of them was lost.
Yeah.
That's what goes into that storytelling. And it's crazy how many, you know, of those situations, you know, Legacy and the Hayter Nation were a part of. Sometimes you forget because, you know, they hadn't been around for a while, you know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if it wasn't for those feuds, you know, FSW wouldn't have gotten to the level that it did. You know, we did the very first Cash in the Case, and that was when Kenny King became part of the Hayter Nation. We were at the FSW Arena. We were doing a No Limits match where the winner would get a shot at Remy Marcel. Yeah. And earlier in the show, Kenny and Rush teamed up together. And I believe, did Kenny lay out Rush then after the match?
I think so.
That set up the heel turn for Kenny. And then at the end of the match, Funny Bone was about to win the money, the Cash in the Case. And out of nowhere, Kenny King came out and took out Funny Bone, allowing Legacy to win. You know, the final scene is now Kenny's got the Hayter Nation shirt, and now there's three members, or the fourth member, Mr. Smith, was more of the manager guy. But now Legacy has the Cash in the Case, and he was the first ever guy to cash in. Remy was wrestling Saiku, I believe, at Sam's Town.
Yeah.
And then Legacy cashed in, and for the first time, because Remy had held the belt for a year and 6 days.
Wow.
So he was the only Limits champion we ever had, and then Legacy ended up beating him. And Legacy, you know, besides being a tag champ, is also a No Limits champion, very, very rare in FSW.
How was that for you in terms of Legacy? Your you know, from thinking where you started to becoming a part of what was the one of the backbones of building a young company by being in a faction that was so hated that they ended up being so popular. And also along the way, you got your belts too. You become a champion. What did that all mean to you, man?
To share that with, like I said, guys, you go so far back with, once again, Joe goes back to that UWF. Kenny goes back to UWF. Remy Marcel goes back. So with those promotions during that time, VCW, you got Adrenaline Unleashed or something. Everything went into FSW. People don't understand, like, the crowds went there. The people that were talented of those other promotions went there also. There's a lot of people that made up what FSW was. But to have that with those people, man, to build those building blocks. Like I said, everybody hungry, everybody trying to go hard for this company, trying to make the most of the points and the roles they were given. And we just really, really believed that we could really do it. I mean, so you get the belts, you get those signed. Like I said about fun, that's really what it was. So walk out there before your theme music hits and you looking at your boy Kenny, you know, Sugar Brown, Leon, this is like the homies going out there. And it's like, you know, sometimes Joe, when he knows that you could pull something off, he'll have a baseline for different things to key on where you could really just key on those things and not have it so step by step on different things you're hitting on an interview. So he's right about those promos. You want to get yourself over, get the company over, but also hit within those storylines of those points, man. And to get the crowd on it, we went heel, we went face, and the crowd dictated that. There were times we walked back to that curtain, and Joe was like, "I got to change some things," and be like, "Oh man!" So it just the way the crowd reacts. So you never know.
You know, I remember the day that I knew that it was time. So I remember before a show, at the time there was another faction called the Agency, and if you talk to Clutch and you talk to Sharp and, you know, you talk to people involved with it, they weren't very successful, okay? There was talent there. Things just didn't mesh out too well. But they were disliked. They had a manager, Gigi Severe. Yeah. So they were definitely not liked at all. So I said, you know what? We need to have a tag match. Let's have the agency wrestle the Hater Nation. And let's see how the crowd reacts. And beyond the shadow of a doubt, the Hater Nation was cheered by pretty much the entire fan base that was at the show. So we knew at that time that turning them would be the right decision. Because technically, we didn't turn them. They were still who they were. And even as faces, and that's also that gray area of professional wrestling, that the Hater Nation really kind of wrestled his heels, you know, and but the crowd responded to them. You know, I always hated it. Everybody loved it. You know, every match always led to Legacy's eye poke of doom. And he was trying to be like DDP, that he would try to do as many different variations of the eye poke of doom. You know, just to get a rise probably out of the boys in the back, you know.
Wait, we had some good ones too. We had some good ones.
What? Okay, explain to the listeners or the viewers who have never seen Eye Poke of Doom. How did it go, and why the hell did you do it?
We started out doing it just like you said, just something ready to laugh at. If it's something I would cheer for, if it's something I'd be like, oh, that was just. You know, like when The Rock first did, like, the people's elbow, he ran and then he stopped and then he just jumped. It was like, why did you even run then? So it was only thing of that. What happens if Leon did a snapmare and then I hit the ropes and I just did a forward roll while I'm sitting right next to him. And then I just threw him in the air and it looked like I really did something. Like and did have the audacity to try to pick up a pinfall in that move. But it just became something it was. We had so many different ways we lead into it where some people were getting onto it. They put their hand over their face and I had to slap them on the thigh and they put their hands down to Tony. You know, so there were so many different ways of just coming up with this spot to get it keep it fresh and say, keep it on there. And it was fun, you know.
We may have to find a catalog of the Eye Pokes of Doom and add it to the FSW network.
Oh, there we go. There we go. There's some good ones. It was some good ones. It was one where Kid Vegas was on the outside, and I showed up early for the IPO. He was on the outside, and Leon had to snap mirror him in, and I was checking my clock, and boom, he falls. Oh, there he is. Then I thumbed him in the eye, so he snap mirrored in. So just like I said, it was really all about fun, man. But when he talks about stepping your game up, and we're bringing these guys in there from California, and Arizona, GQ Gallo, like I said in the beginning, and later on with the tag teams like Suburban Commandos, I learned a lot from those guys. They're amazing. The Young Bucks, Vintage Dragon, and those guys are, man, we faced them. What's his name? Who's the other guy?
Sinai.
So. Jay Cass, when he came along, man, he just, like I said, those guys, you just never stop learning in this business, and you learn every time you go out there.
I know this is on the network. You got to see the Hater Nation doing the spoof on the Suburban Commandos. Watching that live is one of the funniest things I've ever seen in a wrestling
world. See, that's the thing again.
And the Commandos loved it.
One of them was a little ticked off, but he's still laughing to hit because we really put a lot into that. I think we got wind that we were doing an interview of them, and they weren't there. They had a really cold theme song that they come out to the ring to. So if you don't know, when you don't get to see what happens behind the curtain. Well, a lot of us be marking out to each other when we come out there. So we knew everything they did when they go out there and do all that. So we would do their whole entrance. And then we grew up watching Nation Domination versus DX.
Right.
And how they used to imitate each other and stuff. So we got the opportunity to really just throw shade at him. We were bad guys during that time. So Leon had got these things airbrushed, like they had airbrushed uniform things they wrestled in, and then we got do-rags. He got some crazy eyes because one of them got kind of crazy eyes, his googly eyes thing. He got I went to the junkyard and picked up a hubcap and had a thing around it, and we just went all out, man. So we walked up there to music kit, and we just act like them and did some things they didn't do, like patty cake and other things, just so we would laugh at, man, and did a promo in the end. I think I said, if you look up the word posers in a dictionary, you'll see a picture of me and Leon holding up a picture of the Suburban Commando. So it just was just stuff that I think I would have been rolling if I was watching wrestling growing up. So.
When you guys had the chance to do something like that in terms of going out there and having the leeway to hit the bullet points, but then to improvise amongst each other, was the flow easier for you guys when you were just in the ring, in the atmosphere of having a crowd there? Or was it a little more easier for you guys when you were doing any kind of filming or vignettes, that type of, you know, did you feel that the crowd feed gave you more of a ability to interact and kind of, you know, almost one up each other just between yourselves, you know?
Oh, yeah. Joe, kind of like I said, gave the freedom. There's a lot of guys that he did when it came to promos, you know, like just your see what you can do with it, you know, your freedom. And if you really bombed it, then Joe would pretty much have it, you know, lined out for you. But if you did it, you stay within the things, he'll give you that creative freedom. So I think we had a lot of that going on. Even if he wasn't, you know, 100% behind it, if the crowd's popping, he'll definitely kind of go with it and see, you know, where it goes from there. So we did have the thing with the crowd on the promos and vignettes, and then go out there and perform with these guys. It's, you know, when you have guys that you're working to wrestle them, and then they talking to management to try to get a match with you guys, with, you know, me and Leon, that means something. Yeah. Like I said, we're Vegas talent, you know.
Joe, is there anything that sticks out to you that they might have done in that time period as the Hater Nation that either you thought of or they thought of that was just something that was the drizzling shits that didn't work?
I'll be honest with you. If there was, I do not recall that, you know. We always looked at the Hater Nation initially as the breakoff point for Leon Hader.
Right.
You know, early on, we saw the potential that this guy, we thought maybe had the potential to be the heavyweight champ. Even though it was called the Hater Nation, Legacy was the leader because he was the experienced guy, but Hader did a lot of the. And as time progressed, we saw that as much as Hader improved, I don't think the act would have worked as good if they broke up and did their thing. And then Legacy took some time away, and probably Hader wrestled, you know, Jason Cash 600 times between him and Kid Vegas over a year, eventually put Hader with Cash.
Yeah.
And they worked a Big Valley show together, and I think they call themselves the Player Haters. And I'm that name sucks. I'm like, you guys need to be the Players Club. Every time we've done an event where it's like, hey, we're going to do our 30-man rumble at Against All Odds, you know, we want to have surprises. Generally, the first person I'll contact is Legacy. Like, hey, bro, we're doing this thing. You want to come back? Hey, bro, we're going to do the Hall of Fame ceremony. We want to do the Hater Nation versus the following. Yeah. And in most cases, you know, Legacy has always been open to it. And it's great to see that familiar face, you know, now again, because, you know, in all honesty, he could have stayed working for years, but he wanted to be a family man, has a kid now,
yeah, yeah.
Things yeah. like that,
yeah.
that, you know, would have loved to keep him over the last 5 or 6 years as a major part of FSW.
Yeah.
But, you know, when we can get him, we're happy we do.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm rooted in FSW. This is all it is. I'm rooted there. Anytime I can be there, I'm there, you know.
What is it like for you when you do step back into the fold? And first off, you know, the crowd reacts amazingly when you come out. It's, you could probably not show your face for, you know, 10 years and you'd come out and there would still be a core audience for you. Do you get any type of nerves or any type of worries in your head that, okay, you know, if I take a bad bump, you know, this is going to hurt a lot more than it did when my body's used to it? What's your feelings on coming back like that?
I've been fortunate to bring really corny moves to the dance, like an eye poke, that I think I'll still be able to nail that role with the eye poke. But some of you guys that do have a style that it's going to catch up with them. I'm kind of almost a throwback to 80s wrestling. I mean, it's really about storytelling. I think I can adapt to any style, or should I say, they can adapt to my style. It's not going to be anything crazy. We learned less is more when I started.
Yeah.
So, I mean, these guys definitely have a lot of flash. When Joe brings these dudes out there that are kind of like energized batteries, these guys here, you can't just jump in there. Joe got to make that phone call to me, and I got to have months of training sometime. it's not just, you know, a week jump back in there. I keep myself in decent shape, but these guys can go that on the roster now. So,
yeah. Don't let him fool you. He's got a ring at his house.
Yeah, it's broken down in the garage.
Oh, okay.
yeah, I do have that.
What did it mean? Something like the Hall of Fame, what does that mean to you?
Man, to you respect, you know, from your peers, those guys that probably still talk about certain matches, like the Ring Marcells, Cody, Cutthroat Cody, Jacob Boston Young, those guys are down there. I think they're a part of it too. When the Hall of Fame thing comes up, your peers that do respect, possibly, you know, you getting the nod to go in there, and the guys before you, you know, like, you know, Rush, Tyson, Alcatraz, you know, Nick Bockwinkel, who trained us. So to go in there with my boys that I share history with, that's going to be special. And it really goes back so far. Leon, like I said, high school, I met Kenny when I was like 22, 21, and he's always been the same dude. I always say go back to my cousin Kenny on Nickelodeon. I used to watch that. But yeah, go back to that. And Sugar Brown was started out as one of my students, but he used to go to UWF. So that's special. I mean, that's a legit bond, going out looking at those four guys. It didn't happen too many times, the four of us all together, but it was special when it did.
And Joe, yeah, what was your thoughts behind it, and how did you break it to Legacy?
Break what?
The Hall of Fame.
I'm not really sure. You know, we were kind of come up with ideas, and every year, you know, the first year we had like Bockwinkel, Alcatraz,
Rush,
and Rush. And in reality, the idea was trying to have, you know, a legendary guy. That's why the Godfather was in there. Somebody who did something that was different. We didn't want to just be, hey, you're an FSW Hall of Famer.
Right.
It's the FSW runs it, but it's the FSW Vegas Wrestling Hall of Fame. Yeah. And that's why I believe Nick Bockwinkel, who, you know, lived in Vegas for many, many years, yeah, wrestled the Showboat for many, many years, trained at Rush's school, you know, he was the perfect guy to be like that number one person into the Hall of Fame.
Right.
And then time progressed. You know, there's so many guys that are current, like a Kenny King, like a Funny Bone, like a Remy, like Cody, guys have been around since day one, yeah. that their day will come. But like with Kenny, he may have been in the business since I knew him in 1999.
Yeah.
Didn't feel the time was right to have a guy so active as him. Like Disco Inferno got in. Disco had done great things with FSW, you know, training wise, being a part of it, helping with commentary, doing things very selflessly for pretty much no money just to try to be part of the business because he loves it. You know, Disco gets usually a pretty bad rap by most of the fans who have no idea who he is. But talk to some of the guys, and they love our trainers, but there's some that love Disco more than anybody, you know. And once you get to know him, well, he's a lot more personable. He just isn't that people expect that Disco Inferno character the minute you meet him. He's not that guy. Yeah. Once you get to know him, you know, he's loud, he's obnoxious, he's a New Yorker, but if he doesn't know you, he's not going to talk that way to you. Yeah. So as we progressed, the idea became, you know what, in this Hall of Fame, I think it's time that we have a group. Because part of that idea was it gets Kenny in the Hall of Fame too, because he's very deserving of it. Yeah. And then we had some huge factions, which were the Hater Nation, the Following, and, you know, the Dynasty. It's kind of like in baseball. You know, for a while, relief pitchers never got into the Hall of Fame.
Right.
Well, the guy who got into the Hall of Fame first wasn't going to be the guy from 1997 who was great. It was going to be the guy from 1991 who was great.
Yeah.
Like Gossage or the Goose Gossage, whatever it was. Yeah. So the Following, no doubt about it, will be part of the Hall of Fame. But I felt the first faction that really had longevity, had championships, had the crowd, without a doubt, had to be the Hater Nation. So I hit up Phil and said, hey, we're doing this thing. And as an added bonus, we want to have at the Hall of Fame. We have the Hall of Fame ceremony. Then we had Cody get involved, which led to a match featuring the two greatest factions, or two of the three greatest factions, because the Dynasty deserves all the credit in the world also.
Yeah.
But we had the two of them, Sugar Brown for one night only, back to be part of the Hater Nation. And it was great nostalgia because a lot of people don't really know our history. Yeah. And it's great to show them what there was before the fact. You know, Kevin Cross wasn't our first heavyweight champion. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's like some people didn't know the history of the Hater Nation and the Following, and more people may have came on when the Following, so they didn't really know the Dynasty.
Yeah.
And, you know, I felt that was the perfect time that, because it evolves, you know, when you have it in your mindset, you know, who's a Hall of Famer? Who's a Hall of Famer? You know, we've had numerous thoughts for this past year, you know, and we had Mike Modest. We had Paulie Cover.
Yeah.
We had Matt Hardy. We had
Dinelli.
You know, these are guys that help make FSW, you know, the premier company. I like to say not in Las Vegas. I'm saying all over the West Coast and the Southwest. You know, all these guys had an integral part. You know, nobody got more eyes on FSW than Matt Hardy, who wrestled consistently. And then, you know, we did have him. He only was going to do one appearance in between WWE and AEW. And that was for us. Yeah. And unfortunately, everything went down that weekend. So, you know, there's so many great options in there, you know. And the Dynasty, yeah, absolutely. They're going to get in there, you know, in time. But, you know, when it came to the Hater Nation and when I hit them up about doing a match, you know, he was all for it, you know. And like I said, whenever I've reached out to him, there may have been one or two occasions, work issues, life issues, whatever. But 9 times out of 10, when I hit up Legacy about doing a match, doing something special, being a part of the Hall of Fame, you know, he's always going to be there.
Legacy, what was your what's your favorite match out of all the matches you've had at FSW?
Oh, man. You know, sometimes they play on emotions. You know what I'm saying? Sure. When me and Leon got those tag team belts from Vintage Dragon and Cyanide, and Derek Colley was one of my students. She was their valet, and we won those belts cheating blatantly. And the way the crowd reacted, like I said, to see Joe's face when we walked back through that curtain, because it was just, man, Hater Nation was really hidden, you know, and that thing. That kind of turned it for, because we wanted to be in faces after that. But that was magic right there. Go back to the match, you know, what it was. But like I said, once again, that's my boy from high school. Yeah. So to go out there and you know, get that and see some people that helped out with training, you know, showing up bad, was in the crowd. I mean, these dudes were big, you know, to us, you know, following Vegas history. So to do it, man, that was special, you know, one of them. And Remy Marcel getting that No Limits cashing in the case, that was cool. You know, the belts are always always cool, you know. But the Battle Royal first show, hot at the Rancho Swap Meet.
Hottest show ever.
Yeah, literally. Yeah, it was hot. It was hot. We probably not go back there.
No, probably not.
Joe.
Yeah, those stand out, man. Even that last match where we had to disband, the way the crowd reacted to that, you know, you don't really know kind of what you're doing out there, if it really does resonate with people every day. You know, people start the cell phones, because their theme song is your entrance, you know, doing whatever. It's, you know, you want to, I guess it can kind of be organic what you're putting out there. You know, we're putting everything into it. Yeah. But you don't know how they're going to respond to it. But to see tears in people's faces, knows you're really doing it. You don't get a second cut. You know, if you don't nail it that first time, you know, you don't get to take two. You know, you have to be able to nail that emotion, and that sticks with people.
Joe,
you know, I got to believe, you know, when you ask that question, hey, what's your favorite match? You know what? A lot of these matches are good, but the bottom line is you're not going to remember a random one-on-one good match.
Right.
You know what I mean? Everything that got put into it, you know, the Hater Nation disbanding was years in the making.
Yeah.
You know? So that is a special moment. So I couldn't tell you if that match sucked or that match was any good.
Right.
But it was one of the greatest moments because of the situation, you know. Yeah. I'm pretty sure the match was at least passable. You know, yeah. It was probably pretty good.
Yeah.
Nobody at the end of the day is going to remember a lot of that. But when we talk about stories, in my head, I remember – hey, I remember the time with the agency that really got them over the baby faces. Yeah. I remember when we cashed in for the first time. I remember when they wrestled the Young Bucks FSW Arena. Why didn't you save that for a casino show? And my answer was, the reason is I want people to believe that they're missing something if they don't come to FSW Arena shows. Holy shit, the Young Bucks won the tag titles because I was able to negotiate two shows out of them. Yeah. So we would have them drop the title back, which I believe was a three-way elimination match with you guys and the Commandos and the Young Bucks. Yeah. And that was able to get them because we had the history with the Young Bucks from wrestling in the extremely hot Rancho Swap Meet.
Yeah.
So I believe they had just come off a TNA as Generation Me.
Yep.
We were really able to get them, you know, and they were popular. And I remember people taking pictures for $20 with the belts and everything like that. because it was a great moment there. And it's always going to be that way in professional wrestling. Where were you? You know, to this day, I remember at my buddy Sal's house, we used to work in the nightclubs together in Connecticut. And I went over his house to watch Ultimate Warrior against Hulk Hogan. And I never liked Hulk Hogan. I despised Hulk Hogan. You know? And I remember there, and I, you know, Sal's wife and her sister or whatever, they're there. And we're screaming at the top of our lungs. And I'm like, I can't believe it. They're not going to let Warrior beat this motherfucker. But, and then when Ultimate Warrior won, it was like the greatest moment in professional wrestling history. But I wasn't the biggest Ultimate Warrior fan.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's every moment in wrestling that you're going to remember. And the sad part about wrestling today is I don't know anything over the last few years that were like, oh, my God. You know, the only thing that I really, really enjoyed was seeing Drew McIntyre, who the one time I worked with him was one of the most nicest, professional, you know, outgoing guys that I wish nothing but success for. I was actually disappointed because he re-signed with NXT at the time, and we were looking to make him the Mecca champion. So it was great to see Drew McIntyre. You know, we sat through off course, our guys, watching Kevin Cross. You know,
Chris Bay,
some people, and immediately winning the NXT championship against a guy that we put on the map when nobody knew who he was in Vegas, that is, with Keith Lee. Yeah. Like, oh my God, look at this guy. Look at this matchup of two guys that the FSW fans know very well.
Yeah.
You know, and it's always going to be that moment. And there, you know, hopefully we can build on a lot of moments. You know, unfortunately, with everything going on, you know, it's really, really difficult. You know, we did something this past week. Lacey Ryan announced that she will be leaving us soon, which is, you know, fantastic. Yeah. You know, it's great to see it. You know, by far the best woman wrestler I've had privy to work with. And I worked with Taya and Tessa Blanchard and Heather Monroe, and, you know, Sandra Moon's getting really, really, really good, and Maserati also. But Lacey, the first time I saw her, was like, wow, she is fantastic.
Yeah.
And, you know, to see her, which is funny because I brought it up. I'm like, so last January, Cross leaves to go to the big time, and now this January, Lacey's leaving. It's like, hey, guys, you guys better step up next January. Somebody better leave.
Who knows? Yeah. You're right. To touch on that, that's true. Seeing these guys, you know, make it, it's awesome. I mean, seeing like back then, like the Riggs brothers going out there with Kurt Angle for an invitational. One of the guys was part of that old Benelli family. He's a referee on WWE. So you're like, you're those guys that you've been with. Sim Snooker was part of Deuce and Domino that won tag team straps.
Right.
These guys, when they get either a tryout match or they're fortunate to get the belt, like Chris Bay, these guys you see only in FSW. And it's kind of funny to say the future stars of wrestling. Now they're like, where does this guy come from? Well, FSW calls it future stars. Joe can really go there with that. It works because that's home for these guys that started there. It is special. Yeah.
Hey, and by the way, just so you know, Domino lives in Vegas now. Cliff Compton.
Wow, man.
Yeah, he hit me up a few times. He hasn't been able to make it. I guess he ended up getting a job at like Circus de Soleil or something, and moved out here. And now he's pretty much got no job in Circus de Soleil.
Oh, man. Man. Hey, this pandemic, man. Maybe I can do some Domino back out there.
That's what I'm saying. I know. I know Snooker's in Phoenix.
Yeah. Well, the history.
Yeah, man. The wheels may be in motion. That would be very interesting. Now, if you could get Cherry on top, who is the valet who would roller skate out with them, then we're talking.
they could feud with Sky High, you know, three on three, six person tag.
Yeah. Man, it can happen.
So Joe, as we wrap up here, let me ask you this, knowing legacy like you know him, knowing Hayter like you know him, who do you think out of the two of them got into more trouble in high school when they went to school together?
I personally would have to say Hayter, because Legacy to me was always more of the quiet guy. So, which ends up probably being the guy that you didn't think did it, but he's the one who did it. But from the outgoing thing, you would swear it'd have to be Hayter, because he's always the loudmouth. Yeah. He's always the loud guy. But they always be careful of the silent one. So,
yeah.
So is he right, Legacy? And what was the pinnacle moment you can remember of you guys getting into trouble back in the day?
Well, I'm never gonna be saying I'm holier than that. I got into my share of trouble. You know, I went to a few middle school, few high schools. My mother used to have this phrase: "Trouble seems to follow you. You wasn't doing nothing. You wasn't bothering nobody." And so. I had a lot of PT uniforms. So, but I really, I don't know. Just I had my outlet. It just, once you got around there, I started at El Dorado. We'll just go there at the end, El Dorado. And I met him then when I was like 16. So, and it was in that backyard trampoline league. You know, like I said, went down and checked out BWF. We went down there together, and we didn't have the money to do it. But we both individually worked for it. I broke in before he did, but he was still UWF too, you know. So Terry Osoveri, I think Rush gave him the name.
He had some winners there on those names.
But it was.
Hey, maybe we can acquire the footage from Hayter and put it on that FSW network. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, come on now. that was our last one.
Actually, that brings up the idea. I might have to contact Rush and see if we can digitize the UWF stuff and add that to the network.
Oh, man, that'd be good. Yeah, that's history.
You could see Funny Bone with hair.
Oh, man.
Twos.
Yeah, those some good moments. Just training down there. Every week shows, man. You know, but it goes
you could
back.
See what
you
made it. You can see Major Maniac, that he was always out of his mind.
Yeah. Crazy. You better have that match laid out. Some dudes, man, it was crazy.
You know, because, you know, Legacy did have a run as part of the Vegas Originals with Rush and Jason Cash and Maniac.
Yes.
Or Jason Partain, as he's known to the FSW fan base.
Yeah. Partain, man. You go back a ways, man. He had a tryout match with Tajiri and Bobby Lashley.
That's right. Wow. He was the guy from Vegas who got a couple of shots on WWF television. I remember it well.
Yeah.
What would you say, Legacy, in kind of a final thoughts? Is there anything that sticks out in your mind, any feelings or stories about Joe that, you know, maybe you... think of right away, or maybe something that you know he does that look at him and you go, you know, this is why he's successful, or this is why, you know, Joe and I click.
Joe is very opinionated. It works, and sometimes works against it. But I see a lot of the guys, they really want that phrase for him. He kind of holds those dreams. Almost like he is the Vince McMahon. Because when you don't get his phrase, it really gets to you. It isn't like you don't care. Some people are like, man, just do better next time. No, man, it's just like they put so much into it. And if it's the shits, Joe's not going to sugarcoat it. He's just going to tell you, man, it's the shits. It don't matter if you're 6 feet, 400 pounds, it don't matter. If you stick the house up, he's going to tell you, you know. So that's pretty much something that's going to work for you. Nobody's going to just tell you what you want to hear. You know, there were times we got that in the UWF where we went out there and the crowd went nuts for stuff that was just crap. And we were like, man, and we reviewed the tapes. We'd have the things reviewed the tapes. And Nick Brocky would be like, man, that was horrible. You'd be feeling like, look, you're the crowd. But you have to learn how to work. Yeah. Storytelling and stuff. So that's why I said that crowd. Ultimately, Joe might have his reservations, but if the crowd is going, you know, he'll tell you, I didn't like that. But I mean, that's about what you're going to get. But if you really did something, man, you really feeling good that you got the praise, you know, the other man that's running the show.
And Joe, any final thoughts on legacy and what he's meant to you and the company?
Yeah, there's always a statement that I make, and legacy comes into mind all the time. And it had a lot to do with, you know, working together and helping things out. And from back in the UWF days, you know, there was people that maybe I didn't get along with, and there's some that felt that I didn't like them. And I remember being told I was a SoCal guy, and it was like, you know, the bottom line was, you guys don't wrestle and these guys wrestle all the time. I'm trying to make you guys better by having you wrestle them. And when we transitioned and I was no longer part of UWF, and time passed from the Vegas Extreme, now we're getting ready to do, you know, FSW and working together with Phil and him working with us and, you know, doing everything and helping each other out. And he needs something, I need something, you know, we're there to help. And, you know, I always say a piece of shit is a piece of shit.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Like, some guys from, say, UWF may have had a bad attitude, but it's like, you can blame anything you want. A good person is a good person. So when I say that, I always preface by saying legacy, because with some of the guys in UWF, they had a lot of animosity toward me, or they just didn't feel comfortable or whatever. And working with Phil was an easy decision to make, because I liked the guy because he was a good person. He wasn't in it, well, what am I getting out of it? What is in it for me? Like, what's in it for him was he was trying to get his guys experience and opportunities. And we're both kind of the same ways about that when I'm trying to contact Impact or Ring of Honor or any of these companies, AEW. I hit up Matt Hardy recently about some AEW stuff. Absolutely nothing to do with me. I'm trying to get my guys on that show. And he gave us some information, and we're hoping that in the next couple of months, a few of our guys will get that opportunity. But the thing is, we're trying to help people, and you can't beat a good person. You know, a good person is always going to be a good person. That's just the way it is. And, you know, we've seen people, and they perceive themselves as good person people. But a piece of shit is always a piece of shit, and eventually it's going to come out.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've known Legacy for at least 20 years. It was probably 1998, 99-ish when we knew each other.
Yeah.
And over the years, we've always kept in touch, and he's always been a phenomenal guy. And, you know, hopefully at the next anniversary show, if we can do it this year, you know, Legacy will be at the Hall of Fame ceremony. And hopefully he'll be part of the show.
Yeah.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's a great place to end. Again, Legacy, thank you for taking the time. Everyone watching and listening, please, again, check out the new FSW Network. What is it, $4.99 a month? Can't beat it.
It's $6.99. But what we offered now was like, hey, Ben, what are you doing? You know, why should somebody sign up for 6 months? 6 months, you get a month free. 12 months, you get 2 months free. And you could see so much stuff. Not only do we have, like, the history of FSW, we have promos that are in there. Kevin Cross working out on trying to work on promos when he was, you know, 6 months in the business. You get to see stuff that's going on now, like the Fresco show that he does his podcast elsewhere. We're just trying to acquire all the content. And by saying that, I'll reach out to you, you know, Phil, if you got anything that we can add to the network, You know,
I looked at myself.
Love to have the entire, you know, arsenal of Vegas wrestling that's, you know, able to get. You know, you get to see between UWF and VCW, there's so many guys that, crazy enough that it's that many years later, that there's still a lot of footage of those guys that are currently working.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I started with UWF into the VCW stuff and helped out Phil. So it's almost like a family thing. You know what I mean? Yeah. I've even pitched Phil, you know, if you need an arena for the VCW one night only return, you know, I'd be more than happy to offer up our place for it, you know?
Thank you, Joe. Thank you.
20-year reunion. You know what I mean?
Yeah, thank you. I know some guys are really happy if it did happen, you know. I always say maybe, you know. I always say maybe.
Well, on that note, everyone, thank you for watching and tuning in. Please check out FSW, again, the network, their Twitch channel, their website, Fight TV. You can find all this stuff, YouTube. So, you know, sit down, take some time, binge watch, especially if you're in, like, the LA area right now. Got a lot of time on your hands, so check it out if you're a wrestling fan.
Yes, you can watch Lacey Ryan's last match in FSW.
Yeah, which it was a barn burner, too.
Yes, her and Matt Vandegrift had a phenomenal match.
Man. So please check it out. And thank you once again for supporting the Vegas Bad Boys of podcasting. And until next time, we'll see you guys later.